Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, cyber people, those in cyberspace, those wherever they are, Dr. Simon, and the stories we live by. And I've been off the air for a while and really wasn't going to do much of a show anymore. I was, or at least for a while. When I finished my last show, I felt that until I could see something different happening, there was really nothing to talk about. I was going to talk about the same things over and over again. And so I discover I've lied. I'm going to talk about the same thing over today in relation to an article in the New York Times Week in Review this Sunday, November 8th. And it's on the front page. And it's called When Minds Snap by Erica Good, well-known writer, respected writer. War and mental trauma have a tortured history. Even Homer depicted it. Handling the emotional shards is still a mystery. And I'm going to argue that when you finish reading this article, if you read it, I'm not going to go through the article line by line in any way, you certainly feel that the events of this last week and lots of other stories that could be told about soldiers who return and do violence or commit suicide, and the suicide rate among soldiers from Iraq and now Afghanistan war, whatever it is, not called a war yet, but I have little doubt that it will be, that the suicide rate is enormously high, very high, and that the potential for many of these men when they return doing violence to others as well as themselves is also high. The suffering, the emotional suffering, is just enormous and very real. And none of these men or women, since they're in combat roles now, ever come home exactly the same as they went, even though we wish them to be. And it does remain a mystery. And I want to talk about that mystery and how and maybe why we keep it a mystery. And then maybe in the course of the next few minutes, open up a discussion about maybe it's not such a mystery, that we're always looking at things or in so many ways as human beings in the wrong way so that we won't pierce the mystery, that we can keep on going as we've been going, no matter how self-destructive and destructive our attitudes and our actions are, without getting any insight that would force us to change the direction that we're now on. And of course, that direction seems clear at this point. As America gears up for a second front in a war, there are wars all over this planet, and they're getting more dangerous, they're getting more vicious all the time. The mass murder of individuals continues apace. No end in sight. And hatreds based on religion, based on race, based on ethnicity, based on nationalism, based on anything we want to base them on, continues. And more people are disturbed and upset. And yet the mind doesn't seem to grasp, we don't seem to grasp the idea that maybe the very words and language we use to explain events is exactly what stops us from understanding the nature of those events and actually our participation in it. And again, I always say this, I don't know what I'm going to say today is true. It just makes sense to me, and for whoever might listen and hear this, it might make sense to you too. The article was written because of these terrible events at Fort Hood, Texas, when Major Nidal Malik Hassan shot 43 people, wounded 43 and killed 13. He apparently had two handguns, and he went on an extended killing spree. He himself was shot. He lived, and it will be interesting to see what he has to say for himself. Now, At the moment this article was written, the author assumed, as many others did, that he was a victim of the effects of war, the stress and the trauma that war produces. Even though he wasn't yet at the front, he was going to be sent to the front. I find it interesting that the man is a psychiatrist, and he was going to go to the front to treat those who could no longer fight because of psychological difficulties, either because they have become sad, unable to function, crying, frightened, trembling, shaking, or because they become potentially dangerous to themselves and others, and have reached a level of violence and no longer can be trusted to be effective soldiers in the field. That is, to protect their buddies and themselves, and when necessary, kill the enemy. So, as of this today, of this show, it's not clear whether or not the major Hassan is in fact the victim of some kind of psychological distress, or whether or not he's a terrorist. And so it doesn't really matter. We'll just set that aside because I don't want to discuss Hassan. I don't find him particularly interesting. I find the entire set of events and what he did interesting. Now, let's start with the title, When Minds Snap. Minds, in my story, do not snap. They are not rubber bands. They are not cable, steel cable. They're not part of a machine connected to another machine that pulls apart. They're certainly not fingers that snap to make a sound. What this is, this word snap, is a metaphor to try and understand an event that is extremely difficult for most of us to understand. The event is a series of behaviors, unwanted behaviors. And again, for those of you who have listened to this show, you know that this is a repetition. For those who haven't, you go back into my archive, and wherever I discuss mental illness and the nonsensical term mental illness, I say the same thing. The mind is made up of psychological activity, and that is something we don't want to grasp. Instead, the human being is seen as a kind of a machine, a wet brain computer. And when this computer becomes overloaded, it can snap, it can break down. Machines break down. And what I've always argued, along with Dr. Thomas Zass, whose interview is also in my archive, and Dr. Lu Nguyen, I've had him a couple of times, we discussed the same thing over and over again, hopefully, in order to make some progress in separating these ideas. The mind is seen as a machine that can break down. And I argue that human beings are persons, and machines don't break down. Machines break down, but people don't. What people experience is some kind of unbearable pain, psychological pain in a variety of situations, and then based on the skills they possess, try to escape or change that pain. And so they can do a variety of things. One of the things they can do is to cease to function, go into depression, withdraw. Another thing they can continue to do is to hallucinate, create a fantasy world and kind of go live in it. One of the things that happens to people is that when they're in a situation that they can't explain, they desperately come up with explanations that are not good explanations. And these bad explanations are called delusions, all kinds of fantastical stories that try to give a narrative, a sense narrative, something that makes sense out of the event. Just as when mind snap tries to make sense out of the events in which Major Hassan shoots American soldiers down, innocent and defenseless, and our mind tries to grasp it. When the mind can't come up with an explanation, it tries other explanations. It tries other defenses. But what happens is not a breakdown. It's an attempt at escape. It's an attempt at explanation, attempt at rationality, attempt to reduce the psychological pain that the individual is involved in. What is interesting is that when this becomes severe enough and we really now no longer understand the individual who is dealing with this psychological pain, we call them psychotic, we call them mentally ill, we call them disturbed. Historically, they were called mad. And this satisfies our need to reduce our anxiety and tension in trying to explain what is otherwise to us unexplainable. Human beings are all scientists. They need to explain. They need to describe. They need to understand. They need to predict and ultimately use their ideas to bring dangerous events, to bring life under some form of control so that we can avoid pain, physical, psychological, that we can avoid death, that we can increase the joy and the happiness that we want our lives to be immersed in. Not a complicated set of ideas. So, what we now have is a problem. If, in fact, human beings, when they do things that other people can't understand, are not really sick, but engaged in psychological activities, they're doing things that we don't understand but don't like, then we call it sick. It's not a real sickness, it's a make-believe sickness. And what we're really doing is making a moral judgment about that individual. Now, I make a complete moral judgment about Hassan. What he did, I think, is evil. I think it's awful. And I don't care how we explain it, the fact of the matter is that he did such destructive things for whatever his reasons. And again, it's his reasons that I want to try to understand. I won't, not in this show. I don't have enough evidence to even put together a story as to why he did what he did. But it's the reasons I want to understand and replace that simple, silly idea that his mind snapped because it's meaningless. Or to say he's sick because these are moral judgments. They're not medical judgments. There is no evidence whatsoever that any of the guys coming home from war or anybody who's come through very difficult, painful, scary, violent situations are literally sick. They may have illnesses as a consequence, but the behavior that they engage in is motivated behavior. It is meaningful behavior. It is not the result of a mental cancer or diabetes or a mind that is broken. These are metaphors, and they're metaphors that, in fact, carry with it value and moral judgment, but they're not explanations. I'm going to hold off the explanation for PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder for a bit, and I want to talk about the idea of these values, because the values that are hidden in terms like he's mentally ill because he can't shoot his gun, or his mind snapped and he killed 40 people or 30 people. These values are, I think, ultimately dangerous and what we don't want to come to grips with. Now, let me back up for a second, a little bit of history. It's a nice article in terms of the history of this. The idea that a human being under battle could develop psychological problems began in the Civil War. The first great modern war is not World War I, but the Civil War. Terrible, terrible war. Terribly violent, tremendous casualties. And a lot of cannon fire, long-range rifles that did tremendous damage. The bullets spun over themselves so that when they hit bone, or they hit a limb, they tore it away. rather than pass through it. Human beings are wonderfully creative when it comes to inflicting pain on their fellow human beings. By World War I, however, which was a war supposedly to end all wars, obviously, it was simply the war that prepared us for World War II, and what we're doing now and what, heaven help us, is yet to come that we are to do to each other and ourselves. The World War I, the term was shell shock. And it was considered that perhaps there was some kind of neurological problem that caused individuals to withdraw, to sit and weep, to sit and focus somewhere in the sky and no longer respond to their names or their friends or be able to remember things that happened in the past or to wake up out of a sound sleep screaming and terribly upset. The illness of shell shock, and it wasn't yet a full-blown illness, stood against another diagnosis which was clearly moral in nature, and that was coward. And historically throughout war, if a man left his buddies for whatever reason, emotional distress or not, even with emotional distress, it was likely he was guilty, found guilty of cowardice and shot, because such an individual represents a danger to those who want to fight the war. If all the soldiers in the world today, this is a wish I have, how crazy am I? If all the individuals in the world today became emotionally upset at the thought of firing a gun anywhere in the world, and all the individuals in the world became nauseated, started to vomit and tremble, and show terrible incapacitation at the picking up of a gun, what would happen? There would be no war. People couldn't kill one another any longer. But this is not the case. We value the individual who shoots the gun. We want individuals. We call them heroes. And within the framework that is provided by those who are constantly starting war and those who seek a kind of a glory and meaning in their life, the word hero is appropriate. To kill someone who's trying to kill you, to protect your family, to protect your home, it makes you a hero if you fight. Of course, everybody thinks that they're the victim in the starting of a war. Nobody is the aggressor, when in fact, we're all the aggressor. Whenever I hear that the young men in Afghanistan or the young men in Iraq are defending our freedom, I hope these young men don't have an insight, as I might, that they've been taken, that they've been taken for a serious ride. I don't see, and many agree with me, that we were ever really threatened by the Iraqis, no matter how awful Saddam Hussein was as a human being. And now we're caught up in a civil war in Afghanistan that destroyed the British army, that wrecked the Russian army. It is an ongoing ethnic hatred. It is a civil war, and on a tribal level. And this is what we've allowed ourselves, in my opinion, to get caught up in. Yes, Al-Qaeda is a danger to us, and Al-Qaeda should be fought. But the civil war, we can't win a civil war. We can't be involved in a civil war. So when young men are fighting, they have to justify the killing and being killed. And so to seek the glory, they have to justify in the strongest of terms that they're not doing it for themselves, they're doing it for others. Sadly, I believe that they're doing it for the rich and the powerful and the corporations that make billions upon billions of dollars. That profit is one of the things that drives modern war. Again, there are ethnic hatreds, religious hatreds, proving whose God loves the most, and other stories that are near and dear to human heart of humanity. What's so interesting is that the young men who can no longer fight because of emotional problems are called sick. But as we've seen, sick is not a medical term. It's not a biological term. It is a moral term. And so those who can't or won't fight are derogated. They're put down. Right? Maybe if we look at this from the point of view of values, they're the real heroes. They can't fight. They refuse to fight. Maybe one of the reasons so many of these men break down, I'm sorry, bad word, go into such emotional distress, is that they were raised in a country that says, thou shalt not kill, in religions that teach that killing is wrong. Maybe when they kill and see their friends killed, the mind says, I can't do this. How do I reconcile this with my moral view of myself as a good human being? Now, we don't dare discuss such a thing. Instead, we say, his mind snapped. He broke down. The truth of the matter is, as far as I'm concerned, killing another human being is generally abhorrent to human beings unless we have been prepared by others and ourselves to dehumanize those we kill, not to see them as human beings. And I have discussed this many times on the air and in other places in my writing, and I won't discuss it again today, but to say that we are masters of seeing ourselves, our friends, our loved ones, those in our own tribe, in our own religion, who share our color, share our identity in some way, as fellow human beings. And those who would dehumanize us, we can dehumanize and see them as non-human, as monsters, as evil, as great Satans, as devils, and therefore dispose of them. And so this whole idea of psychiatry and medicine taking over the moral function of judging and pretending not to judge those soldiers who can fight and can't fight is something quite dangerous and to me abhorrent, because it doesn't let us see our own values. And our value is, all the time, let's have another war. We're the good guys, and now I'm talking about not just the United States. Everyone is the good guy who starts the war. We're selfless, and those monsters have to be brought under control. And this process goes on endlessly, and it goes on to forever, while the weapons become more and more awful, and the pain that these weapons and attitudes inflict become more serious and widespread. I have spoken a number of times about the political situation in this country, in which so much of the left and the right dehumanize the other side and everybody in the center. And I see nobody really speaking up. Me here, you there. But basically, New York Times, a highly intelligent writer, writing a silly fairy tale called When Minds Snap. Silly but dangerous. The individual who did this had his motives. I don't know what his motives are. I really don't. But I'd like to understand them as motives. I'd like to understand him as a human being, no matter how abhorrent his behavior is. I'd like to understand those who would fight us, as abhorrent as their behavior might be to us. I'd like to understand why some men can fight and kill and others can't bring themselves to do it without some kind of shame and guilt and emotional torture that renders them ineffective on the battlefield. I'd like to know why some men come home from war so dehumanized by the experience they've had in the hell that is created in war, that they dehumanize those around them and pick up their guns and kill others. It's clear from my own experience over the many years and the wars and the soldiers that I have worked with, the ex-soldiers that I have worked with, that many of these young men live in a kind of terrible guilt and shame and rage. Shame over what they've done and guilt over what they have done. And a rage that they have seen through the facade of those politicians, of those leaders who banged the drum for war and told them they were fighting for a mighty cause, and that their slaughter and the slaughter of those they would bring about was justified and was of the highest calling that a human being can find. Now, I think writing a good symphony or a good poem or making a really delicious version of fried chicken, that's the calling. Being creative, to me, is the calling. And being destructive is the opposite of a moral calling. So, I have said what I wanted to say. I say it again. I say it over and over again. I don't think anybody is listening to this. If they are, I would be so grateful if they would call in and express an opinion, either pro or against. They can call in at 646-716-7756. I don't expect there are too many people here on the air because I haven't been here for a month. And again, I don't know when I'll return to the air. Maybe next week, maybe a month, maybe when I see some ridiculous, silly story in the paper that I feel, from my need, needs commenting and needs retelling in terms of a moral, psychological, socially meaningful story, rather than the nonsense that people's minds snap. The rubber band inside our head between our ears. Well, folks, I think that does it. I think it's almost time, another half hour yet before cocktail time. For those of you who come across this and know me, I've been talking about my knees for 2 years. I've had both my knees surgically replaced. I am on the way to recovery. Although when I hang up this phone, I have to find a way to stand up and walk and put the phone back. But I am recovering very nicely. And hopefully can get back to a life that includes my golf and taking long walks and maybe even my beloved tennis game. Okay. Very good. Have a wonderful day. Have a wonderful life. Let's get together and hope for something better to come out of Congress than what's coming out of Congress. And maybe some discourse that makes some kind of sense. And to all the soldiers and sailors and Marines who are fighting overseas, I wish you all the best. I wish you well. I wish you health. I wish you long life. And I wish you insight into knowing exactly what's in your heart when you pull a trigger and expose your body to somebody who wants to kill you. To all the generals who send them and the politicians, I wish you something different. I wish you an excursion in the hell you send so many people to, regardless of what country you're in. My view of politicians grows dim all the time. Individuals who seem to have little or no insight into the consequences of their actions, which are almost invariably, not always, but almost always, self-beneficial, self-inflating, and not at all the nonsense that they spout that this is the service they wish to bring their constituents. Take care, and goodbye.